extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. I'm David Goss. No Andrew Wiebe today, but we do have a New York, New York. Kaylin, hit it.
New York, New York. I'm going to switch it up.
That sounded a lot better.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, Andrew probably will never return because of that. Matt Doyle with me as well. For this one, we've got a massive show coming up for you. Obviously, we will react to the CCL final. CONCACAF Champions League done for another year. Gone but never forgotten. We will one day be back to the days of Haitian teams hosting games in Dominican Republic and players we've never heard of just beating MLS teams. But we have a year to wait for that. So we will react to everything LAFC and Leon. In that one, we have a big weekend of action that we've got to look back on. We've got a couple of midweek events going on. A little bit of MLS, some Open Cup, a Canadian championship. It's kind of like a buffet. Not one full meal, but we're all going to get a couple tasters in there. Yeah, which is how I prefer my meals. And then we'll dig into some big MLS stories from the weekend, as well as what you guys want us to talk about. Thank you, everyone who tweeted back at me, and everyone who did not turn off the show right now.
Wow.
We're going to have 15 listeners. This is going to be a big show for
15,000 listeners.
Yeah. Doyle, you've been away for a week.
Uh-huh.
Are you stoked to be back?
Always stoked to be back with my partners in soccer.
Thank you. Yeah. What was your favorite part of the two shows you missed that you listened to on your free time?
Oh, I thought it was the job that you did previewing the first leg of CCL.
I told him LAFC fans came after me. That was the only thing I said to him. And he obviously threw that back in my face. Well, that brings us into what we're going to talk about. Kaylin, I've seen you.
Wait, I have something to say.
Oh,
I am very disappointed in you.
Me?
Yes, you. Sasha was on the podcast. When was that? On Thursday? And I
wasn't on Thursday. I wasn't here.
Who was on Thursday? I thought it was you hosting.
No.
Tom. Okay, well, I got a bone to pick with Kaylin Carr.
Yeah.
And Tom.
Yeah, me too.
Because Sasha sat here and they were picking their five aside and he said, all I need is BWP. I was left off.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not having that. Sorry, you can beep
Tom.
That out.
Yeah.
Not happy about it.
No, you shouldn't be.
How?
You know what you should
do? You two would make my list.
You'd make my
list. I would advise against that.
No, I would have you, because you know who I'm taking? Diego Valeri, because he left Diego Valeri off his list as well.
What Kaylin just said was, it doesn't matter how bad you are. Me and Diego Valeri can win.
We got this.
What I would advise you to do is I can send you the address of an indoor facility in New Jersey that Tom plays his men's league in, where he thinks he runs stuff. You should show up. You should just teach him how real soccer is played. That will teach him the lesson he needs.
What number of jersey does he wear? Because I'm going to wear the same one and say
10.
There can only be number. There
you don't think Tom wears
10.
The 10?
I don't think he's a fullback.
Wearing a 10 at fullback.
I think Tom wears 10. I think Tom is a 10 in his head.
Ugh.
On his team.
Well, he's going to be a 10 on the bench when I come out to Jersey.
I love it.
Not having it. I'm not having it.
Come out to Jersey. You're Jersey through and through.
Well, you know, I'm new to Jersey.
Yeah, right? Fair. Well, you've got the Adidas jacket over you.
Over the shoulders,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's you're close. You're getting there. I'm offended for you.
Thank you.
And I think Kaylin, Tom, and Sasha are officially never invited to the show again.
Wow.
Ever.
All right. It's been a big intro here.
Yep.
Big breaking news. Anders, make sure to notify everyone else that I just said that, because I'll forget in about 2 minutes. Let's move on to our CONCACAF Champions League. As I said, over for the year. For the fifth time ever, an MLS team playing in the final of this version. LAFC, their second time, which is pretty ridiculous on its own. But they were looking, obviously, for their franchise's first ever victory. I guess you could say a result that would change the reality of this club. Only one team has ever won it. The first leg last week went down to... You can't do that in my ear, Anders, while I'm talking. Because now I got to say Seattle, and then it's a whole thing. They went down to Leon. They lost 2-1 in the first leg. And then coming home on Sunday night, 1-0 loss at LAFC. Going down early to the goal and then never able to come back and score one. Let's start with the games, and then we'll get into some of the bigger picture. What happened across the two legs? What do you make of the fact that I think LAFC were a rare favorite hosting the second leg? One of the biggest, we'll talk about it, budgets in Major League Soccer against not one of the gigantes of Mexico. What do you make of what you saw over the course of the two games?
LAFC did not look like the favorite at any point in any of the two games. They looked overwhelmed in that first leg and were lucky to get out of there with a 2-1 loss, which was pretty good result, to be honest with you. And that gave them the chance to then come home for the second leg and kind of dictate terms, right? Like, they needed the goal. They were going to have to chase, but they were in a strong position playing at home. They did not come out looking like they didn't seem to feel like they were in a strong position. And the biggest tip off that was the formation change. This is a team that has almost always played a 4-3-3, certainly under Steve Cherundolo. They came out in kind of a 5-3-2. It was unbalanced. It was, you know, Palacios pushing way up high on the left. That caused Aaron Long to, he was a left center back, to slide way out to the touchline and do a lot of defending that usually a left back would do. Chiellini, like, there was no partnership between him and Chiellini. 5 minutes before the goal was scored, I said to Anders, like, Leon's going to score a goal coming straight through that gap. There's just like no connection between those two guys. And of course, that is how the buildup came. Obviously, the goal was scored on the other side, but the buildup came right through that gap. And it was, I think, a concession on Steve Cherundolo's part that he did not feel like his team could control the game with the ball. He was, I think, a little scared of coming out and putting his team with the ball on their foot, trying to come up high, put Leon under pressure. And that, to me, was the most, like, that was more disappointing, I think, than the final scoreline, just how intimidated LAFC looked by the moment.
Which is shocking as well, because Steve Cherundolo, when they played LA Galaxy, they set up the same. They didn't go five at the back, though. They went 4-3-3. They allowed Galaxy to have the ball, and they caught him where they're dangerous in that counterattack. I think he was, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, I know when everyone says that, you are being disrespectful. I think he was outmanaged. He was. You go in and you have Chiellini start in the back line. And again, I love Chiellini, but he's been out for 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, when you're going up against a Club Leon side that has knocked off some of the biggest giants in Mexico and then has come here and they're flying under this young manager that will probably be looked at and sought after from a lot of top teams in either Mexico, maybe even Major League Soccer, because he put the foot down and he said, go at this team. You're going to LAFC, where it's a difficult place to go. The fans were insane. It's, you know, one of those stadiums where LAFC play into, you know, and I think everyone, when they did go down to Mexico, getting that late goal from Denny Bouanga, they thought, we can get the job done at home. This is a great result. We got the away goal. I know the away goals don't count, but just that energy coming back in the fashion that they did. But I think Steve Cherundolo was out managing this. And I think he overthought it. And I think he definitely overthought systematically and his formation in this one, because there's, like you alluded to, just all over at the back. And John McCarthy, I think, at fault for that goal. That for ball sure. should have never gone into the back net. Yes, there was a lot of stuff in front of it. It was chaotic. The back, I mean, line
was all
over the place.
It's an open shot from inside the six, but it is at him.
But it's at him, and it's not that hard of a shot. No, like, that has to be saved in those face. Moments. Yeah. So I think, you know, you could see on his face that that wasn't good enough, and I think that just set the tone for the entire match. They just could not claw their way back into it.
So, Cherundolo, you're talking about this decision that he makes. Do you think they could have, though, controlled the game in midfield against this opponent and played the way they play?
I will say that in their previous CCL final in 2020, LAFC controlled the game against a better Tigres side. They controlled that game for 75 minutes, maybe 80. And that team's fatal flaw was they didn't have a killer center forward.
Like, that team's not this team.
We'll get to that in a minute. But like, I maintain that if they had just signed Bradley Wright Phillips for one more year, because he had been so good with that team,
or one more month,
he probably finds a second goal and they're up 2-0 and they're able to cruise because they were that good with the ball. I mean, I don't know. It's disappointing. I think in a game like this at home, you want to come out and be the protagonist. You want to be the one who sets the terms. And the terms that LAFC set were like, we're a little bit scared.
Yeah, it felt like they were always on the back foot. Yeah. Like, even in decision-making, like, it was almost that split second as a player. Do I step? Yeah. Can I step? Instead of, I'm stepping here, everyone have my supporting angles around me. So if I miss this tackle, it's fine. And it seems like, it seemed like they just didn't have that. They didn't have the bite. They played scared, and maybe that had to do with how it turned out in Mexico. But going to Mexico and getting a 2-1 result, that's a good result. Yeah. Doesn't matter who you play, because it's a difficult place to go play. So yeah, just felt like the players, they just played scared.
But have they been the team? So on the year, we just did a preview for they averaged less than 50% possession this year in Major League.
They're a different team under Steve Cherundolo.
So could he have really shifted? Like, it would have been a shift to try and dominate the ball in this
game. So they do still dominate the ball in certain games.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they have had that club in their bag. Like, think about MLS Cup for the first 65, 70 minutes. They were much better than Philadelphia, and they were doing it because they were better with the ball. You know, and we've seen that, I think, at times in the start of this season, though it's become less and less a part of their identity. I'm not saying that they need to go back and be what they were in 2019 and 2020, right? It's a different era, different players. That's fine. Like, they've obviously been really, really good playing on the break this year, and kind of playing against the ball, deeper line a little bit. But it just felt like in this one, it was the wrong choice, and it sent the wrong message, especially in conjunction with going to five at the back and kind of abandoning midfield a little bit. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, Leon, we were like, oh, we're going to get the ability ourselves to get on the ball in these spots. The other thing that I want to point out that the formation switch did, it changed LAFC's pressing structure. So they were a lot worse at winning the ball back immediately,
which is what's made them dangerous out of possession.
Yeah.
It left Denny Bwanga really isolated. Same with Carlos Vela, very isolated up top, where it almost seemed disconnected from the midfield to the front too. And like you guys just said, the ability to press high up the pitch where they are so good in those little change of pace, ball out wide, Denny Bwanga doing what he does, Carlos Vela entering the box. They just didn't have any of it because defensive shape was all over the place. There was too much time and space for Club Leon to get on the ball, pick their head up, and just pick LAFC apart a little bit.
There's a few of the pieces in this team where when the team came out and we talk about the game, you understand, but you go back now and think about it. Like, 5 months ago, Jose Cifuentes was going to Europe on a huge deal. He started MLS Cup. He's great. Now Bogusz is in the team over him, right? Or Ryan Hollingshead.
Yeah.
Right. And I think back to last year's team, and this goes to the conversation of this LAFC team now. The options Trundle had were affected by the roster he now has. Of like, last year, their backup fullback was Franco Escobar, who's like won trophies in this region before. And now it's Palencia, who is fine, but doesn't have experience in these moments. And you talk about, obviously, what they got from Cifuentes last year, and then obviously Gareth Bale off the bench. But then the other big one is Chicho Arango.
Yeah.
And it has been weird for a year and a half of like, oh, we love him, but we can't keep him.
Yeah.
Why can't they keep him? We're not really sure, except that they don't want to pay him. Feels like he could have been a difference in this game.
I will say Club Leon did have an extra month after season ended for rest, recovery, get players healthy, be fully fit for this, where LAFC have been focused on Open Cup. They've been focused on league play.
Well, I think.
Well, not focused, but playing
LAFC too have been going to play Open Cup.
But still, you're still playing those games. Yeah. You know what I mean? So maybe that had a little bit to do with it. Is Club Leon, this is the only game that they had to focus on. They literally had to focus on the CONCACAF Champions League. That is it. Whereas LAFC is balancing maybe a little bit more. So not taking anything away, I'm not trying to make excuses for LAFC, because I would have loved to have seen them win this. I said it a couple weeks back. I wanted to see them win the Open Cup. I wanted to see them win the league. I wanted to see them
you
win this.
Them.
I've cursed them. I know. I'm basically Kim Kardashian with teams in Europe right now. So apologies, LAFC.
Is Kim Kardashian?
I don't know.
She curses teams. Yeah. Arsenal.
I thought the issue was Kylie Jenner.
No, that was basketball. That's basketball. Kim soccer in Europe. PSG, curse them. Anyways.
Come on, Kim. Wake up. But like, how, I guess sort of the Arango thing comes back to like, how big of an opportunity was this missed for LAFC? They could have been the second team to ever win this. And it feels like they sort of came out of MLS Cup and said, we want to compete, but we're long-term thinking about our roster build versus do we just go all in, win CCL, and then we'll figure out the number with Arango and all these other guys later.
I feel like it's a huge opportunity missed, because I think if they had a third DP, like, okay, you're going to sell Chicho Arango, that's fine. Bring in a DP9.
Yeah.
You know, like, go out. Because, right, like, this team still has a DP slot open. It's insane. Like, I feel like it's a big opportunity missed. You never know when you're going to get another chance to get better. It's hard to win a trophy, man. It's really, really hard. And like, especially coming on the back of winning the double last year, like this was the chance to plant the flag. It's like, we're the best team in MLS history. We are. We're the ones who did it. We're not going to talk about them like that anymore. We're not.
Are they behind Toronto now in that combo?
Yeah.
Who also, because Toronto set a points record?
Yeah. Cool. And Toronto also were much better in the CCL final against a much better, well, they were better beating Club America and Tigres along the way. I'm not going to say that that Chivas team they beat was particularly
good. Is the first CCL final an MLS team has been in, besides the one game that LAFC played because of COVID, that an MLS team did not get a result across the two legs.
Yeah, the LAFC set a record. They're the first team to lose both legs for an MLS team in a CCL final. Like, that's... Yeah, the face you're making.
You know what I mean? Because when you look at LAFC in league, you're like, okay, you still have two games in hand. You're still third in the West. And they have such good players. But then when you say stuff like that, you're like, that's not a stat that you want.
So they have really good players. I think after the game, one of the comments that went around that people really latched onto was Steve Trundle maybe asking if they had enough good players. And Steve Trundle's quote was, and I'm taking this from Cesar Hernandez on Twitter, but a lot of other people had it out there. In tournaments like this, if you want to consistently compete in finals and win these, you're going to have to rethink your roster rules and regulations. You're at a big disadvantage, MLS, is he saying. There's a little more money on the other side of the table. People went on Transfermarkt after this because everyone has time on the internet. Technically, LAFC's team value is 55 million. Is this in euros? And Leon's is 47.4. This is not like an accurate way to break anything down. It does, though, go to the point, which is this wasn't Tigres and it wasn't America and it wasn't Chivas. Like, this Leon is not a team that spends at a ridiculous number. LAFC are one of the tops in MLS. Yep. Is this a fair argument for Trundle to even have brought up here?
I think it is. I think if you look at Major League Soccer and the gap between players coming out of college and maybe players that are in their second, third season, there's not a lot of players in that middle gap where you do see consistently across Mexico. There's not that big wage discrepancy. So you have players on 6, 7, 8 million, and then you have players on league minimum to 150,000. There's not a lot of players that are on the $400,000, $500,000, $600,000. So those players would probably choose to go to Mexico to get a little bit more of a pay increase, if, you know, I'm being completely honest, which means you have more depth. And you look at this LAFC side, yeah, they've spent a lot of money in Major League Soccer, but I think if some of those rules maybe are changed or moved around a little bit, you have more depth in Major League Soccer because you have players that are coming to Major League Soccer that are on those $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 that they would potentially get paid in Europe, in, you know, the Middle East or in Mexico.
But in this game, the two best players on the field play for LAFC, right?
Yep.
Buonga and Vela.
100%. You're not wrong.
So they had enough talent. And then you are right in terms of that discrepancy. LAFC didn't have as many options to play. But you look at this bench. Stipe Buyuk, Timothy Tillman, Jose Cifuentes, Kwadwo Opoku, Ryan Hollingshead.
Yeah.
That's a level of depth.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's a level of unique depth in terms of credit to LAFC that they've done well, where other MLS teams, I would not be able to say that about their bench.
It's also LA, though.
Yeah, right. They have an ability to recruit players in a different way.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of elements of truth to what Steve Trundle said. Like, okay, it's always time to rethink the MLS roster rules. And I think they probably do that over at the HQ. They're probably always saying, like, okay, is this still working for us? Is there a way that we can, change this? Yeah, make it like, you know, that's how we got the U22 initiative. And hopefully, you know, maybe there'll be a fourth DP added or something like that. That is not why LAFC lost this.
No.
They lost this because their best players didn't play. Their structure was a mess. That's on Steve Cherundolo. And because they didn't go all in. Like we said 10 minutes ago, they still have a DP slot open. That's weird. That's weird for a team that's this close to qualifying for the Club World Cup to be like, no, we'll just address that in July, I guess. Like, I
was going to say, is that weird for them? Like, I mean, it's a head scratcher for me, but for you guys, like,
for LAFC,
why
did this last year.
They did, but they weren't playing.
No, I totally agree with you.
Last year.
But they have a history now of like, let's leave an opening out there. We are LA, and let's see who's hanging out.
Yeah.
Let's go down to the golf course.
Benzema. And the bring club. Him over. I know he's already signed in Saudi Arabia, but.
But last year, right, they got Bale on a non-DP deal, and then they got Teo on a DP deal. And it was just like, we have space open. We can do it. We're competitive. But I completely agree with you that it didn't. Supporter Shield was the only thing on the line there.
Yeah.
But it is has been their history now, and it has worked against them in selling. Of like they kind of kick things down the can down the road, and it's like now they're going to lose Cifuentes for nothing. But they've
Cifuentes isn't even a starter anymore.
Yeah, fair. We haven't talked about Carlos.
Do we understand why Bogus starts over Cifuentes?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we like activity and connection in midfield. I think that's why. we could talk about. Do you want to talk about that more?
No.
We haven't talked about Carlos Vela. I just realized.
There's a reason.
But like how so they won MLS Cup and it was a big like obviously right we know Bob yelling at Sebi Salazar, shout out to Sebi, does a great job being like he's a big game player, can't ask that question anymore. They won MLS Cup. How big of I don't know a stain is this on his legacy, or how much does this reshift coming out of that like where he stands?
I mean, I think My feelings on Carlos Vela are the same as they were. Like he's one of the most talented players we've ever had in this league. He had the single greatest season that anybody has had in this league. Two Shields, one MLS Cup. If they win something more before he retires, which would probably be the end of this year. Even if they don't win anything more, he'll go down as one of the great players. But like if he had come out and bagged a brace in this one and they win 2-0 and then we'd be like, oh, did he have, you know, the greatest 5-year career in MLS? But like, we're not going to remember him like that. And there's a lot of listeners in Mexico who are like, yeah, Carlos Vela, you're not going to remember him in those big games like that. That's just what it is. Doesn't mean he's not a great player. Like I've gotten more joy out of watching this man play soccer over the past 5 years than almost anybody else.
I think it's what he does off the pitch as well for me. Like I love good players, like star players, but I think he's brought Major League Soccer and brought it on board, because sometimes you get those big players that come over and think it's going to be a walk in the park or don't buy in or aren't good teammates. And I feel like he's done that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like you look at him even in his interviews, like he's a guy that you would want on your team. And he's a guy that fully supports Major League Soccer. And I can't say a bad thing about him, whether he's, you know,
The worst thing you could say about him is like, I won't remember him at the same level I remember like Ladero. Because this game last year, Ladero showed up.
That's an interesting name. I didn't see that one coming.
I mean, Ladero is arguably the best DP in the history of the league.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at what Seattle have been since he got there, his centrality to it, what like the sort of era that his signing really inaugurated, or I don't want to say inaugurated it because you could take it all the way back to like Scalotto if you want to do that with the South American number 10s. But like he was a big signing that delivered in every conceivable way up to and including winning the Continental Championship.
How much does Anders pay you for this segment?
He's got Seattle under that shirt as well. Seattle jersey.
All right. So congratulations to Leon. 78 years. The club has existed. This is their first CONCACAF Champions League. They got knocked out before the Liga even technically really started, as you said, over 3 weeks ago. This is a huge moment for them. They also had sort of carried a little bit of they were the letdowns. They had lost to an MLS team, I think, 3 of the last 4 years.
I mean,
in Champions League, and
Seattle
they've done it.
Crushed them last year.
Mm-hmm. TFC was able to push them with Nobel Akello in central midfield. Shout out to Nobel. And Luke Singh on the back line.
A few years ago, LAFC beat them right before the pandemic.
Yeah. So they had been in this competition had been tough for Leon. Congratulations to them. This now makes, in the last 18 years, 17.
And to the manager.
MX clubs. Yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations to Leon. They will obviously now be in the Club World Cup. They pretty much swept the awards coming out of this one.
Deservedly.
John McCarthy got best goalkeeper.
Oof.
Yeah, that's always a tough one to happen.
I don't agree.
It's like when Ali Khan got that in the 2002 World Cup because he had been great.
Yeah.
And then he was a disaster against Brazil in the final.
Also, the way these things normally work is like there are so few games in these tournaments, like a World Cup. If you make the final, like the people who make the finals are going to get the awards because they do more things. So that's tough. And Buanga actually was the top scorer.
Yeah.
And
Pawanga was great.
And we might never see him at this stage again. You never know. It takes a really, it's just one of those things I'm coming out of it saying, like, I guess after Seattle last year, I felt like a different confidence of MLS teams and CCL. And the road has changed a bit. We've seen a lot of MLS semifinals, which, like, for TFC, they had to go through Tigres, then Club America, then Chivas, which is, I think, was a different test than facing an NYCFC or facing a Philly in the semifinal. Not that it's easier. It's just different. And now you sort of go back to it and you're like, oh, yeah, this is what happens. Liga MX teams win CCL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
17 of the last 18. You don't know when LAFC will be back there. They will have an opportunity in Leagues Cup. Mm-hmm. I think that's something where you talk about Carlos Vela, the reality, the perception of him, especially south of the border, that could shift things. If he can win a Leagues Cup, if he can beat some of these top Liga MX teams on even playing field, I think that's one of those things where people would take notice. And then we have a lot of questions about this season for LAFC. So at Casual and MLS says LAFC coming off this tough defeat, they now have to make up 5 games in hand. It's going to be a lot of short weeks plus Leagues Cup. How big of an impact do you expect this to have? They have 6 more matches in June. Is that a good thing in that
you can
get it out of your system? No, it's a bad thing.
I just think for especially coming off a letdown. Do you know what I mean? Like both legs, didn't win, you know, clean sheet at home at LAFC. Again, I know you guys said the second team with the Open Cup, but there's been a lot of letdowns in a short amount of time. But then it could be, they could turn Philly on us. They could be what Philadelphia Union were, where, you know, shocking in league play. At least they haven't been shocking in league play.
No, on points per game, they are still first in the West.
Unbelievable. So it's just a lot of games in a short amount of turnover, but you just went through the bench of, you know, comparative to Club Lyon. They do have players that can come off a bench and make it and be game changers, but I will say it's a letdown for players on a team mentally getting knocked out because, like, you want to play in a Club World Cup. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? That's what they were focused on. That's what their rotation was all season long, focusing on this Club World Cup and getting to the final. And obviously that didn't happen, but that's a lot of games in a short amount of time.
I mentioned that TFC thing because obviously I think Seattle sits in one place having won it.
Mm-hmm.
If LAFC does anything this year, though, even if they just finish high in the standings, would that reset it? Because TFC fell apart. They didn't even make the playoffs the next year. So they did a treble, then a CCL final, and then nothing.
Right.
If LAFC can compete or win something, would that 12-month, 18-month span take them over?
Let's revisit.
Cool. Yeah. Doyle's going to kick it down the can. Kick the can down the... I think that's fine. We'll leave your DP spot open.
Yep.
We'll see if you can win CCL in the meantime. And I'll just make my signings over here.
I'm annoyed that I think both Philly and LAFC had legitimate shots to win this thing this year. And Philly let Corey Burke go. And that doesn't seem like the biggest thing, but if you think back to MLS Cup, Corey Burke is the one who changed that game mm-hmm. for Philly. They let him go, which I thought was an unserious move. And LAFC didn't fill out their roster with another DP and let Chicho Arango go, which I thought was an unserious move. It's annoying. It bothers me.
Yeah. And I do wonder for Trondal's comments. So if you start talking about roster rules and regulations, maybe you start talking about not just pure spending, but like the ability to then get out of those moves. Because I think that's part of what's tough is like you have to make the decision in January. Well, in reality, you have to make the decision when you're on this parade bus after MLS Cup about what your roster looks like for the next 12 months, where is the space to be like, yeah, we can extend Chicho short term on a high number and then maybe get out of it in June. And he gets what he wants and we get what we want.
But what do we think if LAFC had Chicho and lost anyway, and he's on the market, there are what, 20 MLS teams that are looking to give them $3 million in GAM for this guy?
I don't know. Center forward's a really deep position across the league right now.
Stop.
Let's get to our all-star voting then. And let's move on to all-star game voting. Voting is now open for the 2023 MLS All-Star Game presented by Target. Voting closes at midnight on June 14th. FanVote will help select 12 of the 26 players on the all-star roster. The all-star roster will be announced in late June. You can go to MLSsoccer.com to cast your vote. You were down in D.C.
I was.
Last week.
Yep.
Great city, right?
You know what? I landed and I've been to Washington.
Wait, you flew?
Huh?
You flew?
Yeah.
That's a bit of an issue for me.
Come on.
That's a bit of an issue for me.
Honestly, I probably should have. It's a train that you can take, right?
Yeah. You could take it out of New Jersey. You don't even have to come into New York. You take it out of New Jersey.
I should have done it. I was delayed 3.5 hours in the airport, so I would have been already there. Yeah. Anyways,
build
not
more
a big
trains.
Deal.
I take more trains.
Landed in Washington, and I played in the NWSL, so I'd played the Washington Spirit. Mm-hmm. But they're nowhere near Washington.
Yeah.
The airport was maybe 10 minutes from like the White House. We stayed close to it. I was blown away. I was like a little kid with my phone, like filming everything. And my driver was like, who is this? And I'm like, what's this? He's like, that's like the monument. I don't know which monument. It was like a tall, skinny one. And
it's
I was like,
the Gretzky monument.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. If it was Canadian, I would know it. And then I was like, where's the White House? And he's like, literally right here, that big White House. I was like, amazing. It was such a cool trip, though.
Amazing.
It was awesome. I was like, I can't wait to go back to Washington and actually see it.
It's the right time of year.
Yeah, yes. It's beautiful.
You just missed the cherry blossoms? Cherry blossoms,
yeah,
I think just happened.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and then I'll be there with like heat and humidity.
Yeah,
it is a swamp. Yeah. They built it on a swamp.
Yeah.
Were you intimidated by the layout of the city? It was built to intimidate. Architecturally.
No, yeah. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it failed.
It failed.
If
no,
we hosted the Canadian women's national team at Audi Field, they would not be intimidated.
No, we wouldn't.
Shocking by that one. So let's go to a couple of our picks, though. We are going to do some full ballots, I think, coming up because Andrew will be back. So we have lists that we need to put together, and we don't want to steal that from him. So we're only going to say two names.
We should have definitely stole it from him. He would have been raging listening to this.
Man, Doyle would have been stoked. We would have done three full all-star. We would have been debating the 29th spot on the team. Is Graham Zusi still an all-star? Let's talk about it. Here's the statistical breakdown. Let's everyone give us an obvious first pick. Has to be on. And then Anders put, quote, underrated, but absolutely deserves to be an all-star, which is where my center forward joke came, because I want to start with your picks. Who is your obvious one and who is your underrated
okay,
one?
My obvious one, Denny Bwanga, obviously.
Denny.
Right? Bwanga. Yeah. Da. My underrated, Brian White, Vancouver Whitecaps. 6 goals, 1 assist on the season. And I think Vancouver's really shocked me this season. I grew up playing for Vancouver Whitecaps, so they always are like near and dear to my heart. But he's been fantastic. I like him. He deserves the call up.
He's left some goals on the board, right?
Yeah,
like he's finishing.
Yeah, he has.
But
yeah, he
like
has.
you want your center forward to always be in the action, to always be in good spots, and you trust that if he's finding those chances. He's a proven goal scorer, right? He's been a double-digit goal scorer twice in his career. So if he's finding those chances, you trust that eventually he will start putting them away, and that's what we've seen.
And I just feel like with All-Star, it's always, you know, because there's not a lot of star number nines, like you were just joking about, that are consistent. But
can get a Duke grad. Why would you waste money on Chicho Arango?
No, I'm just saying, like, you're going to see those big stars as the number nine because you want to, obviously, selfishly. Like, even Chicharito that's been injured, I still want to see him at the All-Star game. Do you know what I mean? Because he's a fun player. And even in, like, the skills challenge, like, I want to see him there. But I'd love to see Brian White there.
There's plenty of space for everyone. Yeah. I think Brian White can come in. I like that pick. What are yours?
Well, DC, number nine. Christian Benteke.
Obvious.
Seems like the most obvious. You're just watching I did instant replay this week, and I did Kamal Miller taking him down from behind. Mm-hmm. And I almost wrote all-star center forward Christian Benteke.
Got it.
And stopped myself and just called him star.
And it's not just that he's scoring goals or drawing fouls and like changing games like that. It's like he is their system to a degree that I don't think we've seen from a center forward for a long time. I think
back to like Drogba and Kai.
Or like Zlatan for those two years. And obviously Benteke hasn't been as good a goal scorer as Zlatan, but what he does is give you more because he's actually working out there. He works defensively. He works to combine. He's not just demanding the ball so that he can get chances. And like he has so clearly bought into what Wayne Rooney is doing now with this team, and what they're doing would not work if Benteke was not out there. Because he's dominating every center back he goes up against. It's like mouse in the house stuff. Like he's just absolutely crushing them. He's
literally like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Just put it on the target. I'll do the rest.
And it's been fun to watch because he's a guy who I think took an unwarranted amount of stick for his performances in the Premier League. Like he was always very good, very honest player. And like, he missed some chances. That's all some fans see. And like, of course, if you're a player, you're going to hear about that. So to see him here doing this well
and be healthy,
because
that was a big part of it. And he seems to be really happy.
Yeah.
And as a leader, I think, because it's him taking Rooney, but I also, what Rooney's doing, it feels like when he scores or when things happen, like there feels like a group that comes together for him. And that's what you want
to
see.
Do you think he was intimidated going to DC? I'm kidding. It's a joke. Laugh. You just made the joke about DC being intimidating.
You didn't give me a chance to process the joke.
Because you looked at me deadpan.
We're not on 360. We like your jokes.
Yeah.
Neither of us is Sasha.
I know.
You're in the same
Seriously, space. Sasha does not think I'm funny at all. I have to talk to him. I need to talk to his agent.
Sasha's, although I will, you didn't hear this probably. He corrected me because I misspelled your name on the rundown. So he protected you.
That's okay.
I'm saying he's on your side.
BWP just texted me the other day and called me K-A-Y-L-I-N. And I didn't have the heart to correct him because he's the nicest person in the world. And I was like, thanks.
I didn't put an I in. I just don't know where the L's and the I's go.
So. Don't worry. No one does.
My underrated but absolutely deserves to be an all-star. Gonna stick in Vancouver. Julian Gressel's been awesome.
Love that show.
He's been absolutely awesome. And so here's the thing. I think he is the best wing back in the league. I think given that...
Is Kai Wagner in that combo now?
Yes, but I still think it's Gressel. Okay. I think given that DC are playing a 3-5-2 now, if Julian Gressel was out there going, you know, end line to end line, Benteke might be on 15 goals already. The interesting thing is that he's playing as kind of a shuttler, kind of a number eight for Vancouver, where he does still flare out and provide that great service from out wide. But he's also much more involved in buildup. Vancouver has a lot of their possession deeper in the field. And that, you know, part of that is they want to draw you upfield. And then Gressel is the one who most often hits line breaking passes that spring Brian White or Pedro Vite or Ryan Gault. He's been fantastic. He deserves to be there. It'll be funny to watch him play for Wayne Rooney, who traded him 35 minutes after he got, because Rooney's managing the team, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the home manager.
Home manager does.
Yeah, so that would be funny. But yeah, like, that dude deserves to be there. He's earned it.
This is almost an MLS best 11 of we're going to have nine of one position. We're going to have nine number nines, and everyone's going to be from Vancouver. And of course, because now I'm picking Montreal, my obvious one is going to be Christian Espinoza.
Yeah.
I was going to say Lucho, but I think it was said last week. Either way, I think there's like six or seven players we're all naming that are clearly going to be on this list. And then my underrated one's going to be obviously be Matthew Choinier.
All right. Great show. Give me the sell on Choinier.
Well, one, I had to pick an underrated person and an all-star. That's tough.
Right.
Because there are 29 teams. The assumption would be. Oh, I thought Anders was about to correct me on how many teams there were, and I got really nervous, but he was just telling me how much time. So it's tough to have an underrated one, because if you have two from a good... If Philly gets two,
right.
Other teams are not getting any.
Right.
For me, Choinier has been the most consistent player for Montreal. He's put up some counting stats, goals and assists.
He's played a bunch of different spots.
He's played four different spots, which actually helps for an all-star team, because he can play all the spots.
What is
his
point?
What is his best position? Like, what... At what position have you watched Matthew Choinier?
And been like, he's an all-star?
Yeah.
I think as this, which is like a second eight that is more active around Wanyama, ideally behind a true 10, I think as a connector, a guy who's just always an option, creating a triangle for everyone else everywhere on the field and moves the ball quickly.
Okay.
Where those guys, they're probably not normally all-stars. I think a guy like Robin Ludd's probably the elite of that convo.
Mm-hmm.
He's not there yet, but my hope would be one day he is. And my hope would be that as we've done this with Atlanta, a bit of like, if Montreal is going to be a selling team or Philly, I hope he's a guy who stays. And it's like, we sell, but he's a guy where we know everyone else we bring in can play with him because he can play with everyone. So that's my underrated one. So it will be a Canadian
Canada,
national team of number nines that will face off against Arsenal coming up in July 19th. Throwing that one out there, but it feels right. In Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, not your nation's capital.
No, it's my nation's capital. I have two sons that are American.
Okay.
I'm
but this
American
is a
now.
Dual nationality league. So also shout out to Ottawa, who will be hosting other stuff over the course of the summer. I owe that one to Ottawa. I kind of screwed them the other day. No, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming something's happening in Ottawa in the next 12 months. I don't know what it is.
Canada Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'll be a big Canada Day. Let's go into Major League Soccer this weekend. Match day 17. Best things we saw. Doyle, let's start with you.
A guy who will 100% be at the All-Star game. Hany Mukhtar absolutely cooking the FC Dallas back line. He is, I think he's the best player in the league. Again, I know there's an argument for Lucho Acosta, but man, what Hani's been doing from like day one of this season, well, really day one of the 2021 season, right? Because he took a year to settle in. He wasn't great in 2020.
He had five goals, but he was their leading scorer.
Yeah. And then he was good in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then he spun that forward into 2021. He was an MVP caliber player that year. I think 16 and 13.
You're really going to bring that up? Every Nashville fan's yelling right now. Well, he was an MVP. He should have been the MVP.
No, yeah. Carlos Hill should have been the MVP. Obviously, last year, no question, Hani was the MVP. And now he's already got 10 goals, 5 assists, is it?
Yeah.
3 years in a row, he's at 10 and 5 at the very least. There aren't a lot of people who've done that. He could be 15 and 10 3 years in a row. I don't know if anybody's done that. Maybe Robbie Keane, maybe Giovinco. That's a level of...
That's crazy. If you think about it, those two players alone.
Yeah.
Like, he's in that category,
yeah.
Which is shocking.
And it's not just... It's not just that he's putting up numbers. He's doing it in style, man. And Nashville are doing it with more style than what we've seen from them in really last year. You know, playing that diamond midfield now, I think they're getting more of the ball in good spots. They're allowing Hani to drop in and be a playmaker and not just a goal scorer. Yeah, that was the best thing I saw this weekend.
I'm just going to tack on to yours because it's a great one that you just had, but one big takeaway for me this weekend is not only, okay, the defensive side, the attacking side, he's scoring goals, he's making assists, but like he's a leader on that team. There was a moment in the second 45 minutes and there was a point where the camera zoomed in on him and you could see him angry, and they'd been playing good. Not in a bad way, but just trying to organize the team a little bit better within the shape with that diamond midfield of like, when I step here, I need to know I have someone supporting me. And that for me is a leader... It's a hard leader to find where they're scoring goals, making assists, and then they're also a vocal leader as well. So, yeah, I love him. I wish there was 11 more of them, honestly. He's amazing.
So, for Nashville, this now makes, I believe, 7 unbeaten, 6 wins. Mm-hmm. A large chunk of that without Walker Zimmerman. They went to Dallas and got this 2-1 win. Zimmerman did return.
But he was subbed off, what, 55 minutes?
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah, but... Has
still,
been out for
no,
2 months?
No, but for,
oh,
no, the right
without.
Decision. But yeah. I'm saying they're still like with or without him,
right.
Which is, yeah.
They are third on points per game in the league. Second is LAFC, as we know. They have 6 games to make up now. Are they legitimate Shield contenders?
It feels like it, yeah. Especially mm-hmm. because we do expect them to add a number 9 in July. We do. Now, whether or not that makes a difference.
Anders would like you to know they just traded for an international roster spot. They traded 4-1.
Right.
Unique.
Yeah, traded for an international roster spot, opened up a DP slot. Like, you have to expect they're going to... The name that I've said on the show already a million times is Adam Buxa. If you add a
what
guy,
about Chicho Arango?
Like, yeah, about Chicho, exactly. So, yeah, it feels like they're a Shield contender, unless Cincy just keeps running away with it, which Cincy might do because they've been really good.
And they also have a DP spot open, which is scary as well.
Yeah. Yep.
They play each other on July 15th, head-to-head. So going into All-Star break.
Amazing.
Or not All-Star break. Going into the All-Star game, we're going to see the top 2 teams in the East as of now face off for Nashville. It's been an incredible run this season. For me, I'm going to go to Ohio, but not to Cincinnati. We will talk about them coming up. The best thing I saw this weekend was Wilfred Nancy playing like 19 fullbacks, 0 center backs, building out of the back, beating Charlotte 4-2. There are mistakes in all of this. Obviously, Amundsen pass across the back to Marrera. That leads to a tap-in for Justin Miram. It makes it tougher than it has to be. But I think I've said this every single week. The confidence that Nancy gives his players, the belief he has, the vision he has to play the way he wants to play. And I have talked about Chicho Arango a few times of just the way he's being used, where he picks up spaces. He made a selfless run for Christian Ramirez's
goal.
You said
Chicho Arango. Did you mean Cucho Hernandez?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Imagine if they had Chicho Arango, though. That would be a front three to talk about. Yeah, Cucho Hernandez, my golden boot, first draft pick of the season. He made selfless runs. He drops in and finds different spaces. It was sort of 3 forwards in the attack because Zellerion doesn't really drop, but you have Christian Ramirez holding things centrally. And Arfson was forced to start due to an injury to Marfarsi in warmups and maybe scored the goal of the weekend. And that's just the, like, what
other you than want. Other than Hanis.
Come on, dude.
Okay.
If you could burn Harrison Awful down the right wing, you're doing something right. And he had an assist. Yeah. And I think that just goes to the, like, this is a young kid playing in MLS for the first time, forced into the starting lineup, and Nonsei can settle him and put him in a space where it's like, go and attack.
Yeah.
Play the game on the front foot. Everything you guys talked about negatively with LAFC is like, since Columbus goes out and they play the way they want to play, they dictate the game, especially at home. I understand against Charlotte, but like, they didn't get killed not having a center back out there against a team that could have had Capetti. They didn't, and has Swiderski in it. So credit to Columbus. I think big result for them. Credit to Nonsei. I just think everything that keeps them above the playoffs, like, playoffs is a win this year. Every result is just big to get to that point. Let's go up north a little bit more to your best thing you saw this weekend. What could it possibly be?
Well, I'm not going to Canada. I'm going close, though. I got to go to Minnesota. Emmanuel Renault. So the return of a legend. Now, again, legend, okay, maybe not in these terms because he didn't show up for preseason. He hasn't showed up for his team.
That's kind of legendary.
Left. Yeah, it's kind of legendary, but in the worst possible way. Don't recommend doing it if you're a young viewer tuning in here trying to make it professional. But what Adrian Heath has done with this team, considering, you know, their number nines haven't really showed up. Emmanuel Reynoso didn't show up, no pun intended, and that without Robin Lode. But Emmanuel Reynoso, when he entered the pitch against Toronto, down 1-0 at home, the kid was a joke. The ball was at his feet, and I was literally, like, mesmerized watching on MLS 360 because we're in a four box, and I couldn't – obviously, my eyes are always on when Minnesota United play, but I am watching him, and the pockets of space in which he gets in, considering he's been out for almost 6 months playing no soccer, maybe a little bit of pickup back home when he shouldn't have been, but he's just unbelievable. And I was thinking – God, you can say sorry all you want to the players on your team for not showing up and write the messages, but it doesn't matter unless you show up on the pitch, and he did. It was a completely different team when he came back in. Just the confidence in the players around him, pushing numbers forward, center backs bombing on into the 18-yard box for headers because they know when the ball's at Emmanuel Reynoso's foot, when he's on,
he'll keep it.
He's one of the best number 10s in Major League Soccer. And you can fight me through that through and through, but he is so good, and it gets me excited because you look at this Minnesota side and they haven't been exciting in the back. Yeah, defensively they've locked it up at the beginning of the season, kind of went on a little bit of a drought offensively, defensively, but these two games, the next two games, they're on the road against Montreal, on the road against Real Salt Lake, two games that are very winnable for them if he is on the pitch and starting. And I think after that performance, like, Adrian Heath must be, like, smiling ear to ear at this point in time.
And a reminder, at Montreal will be after Montreal flies back from Vancouver midweek for a Canadian championship, which we will preview coming up in just a moment. 1-1 draw in that one for Minnesota. Insigne scored again. I think it's three straight games now with a goal or an assist for Insigne.
Goal and two assists, yeah.
So I think you have to tip your cap to, like, we all ask the questions. You're the high-paid guy. It's not working. It's on you. He has at least stepped on the field and done what he can to try and settle things for Toronto. It has not settled completely, but we will dive into that more another day. Let's go into our one-touch takes. Let's start with NYCFC Revs 0-0. Doyle, this one to you.
I don't think Nick Cushing has done a great job, but he really got hung out to dry by CFG when they, you know, traded away or let Eber walk this offseason.
No, they traded him.
That's right. They traded him for, what, $400,000? Yeah. They traded Eber away.
For what you'd give away for me. That's what they traded him for.
And didn't replace him with any kind of true number nine. And then it seemed like at the end of the window, they were doing that when they loaned Thiago Andrade out, which opened up an international roster slot and a U22 slot. It's like, okay, they're going to have some 20-year-old Brazilian number nine coming in. That never happened. And this is a team without a focal point in attack. They have so much skill out there. They have so much talent. I think they have very good balance at times, but they don't have that goal scorer to tie it all together. And when you have that combined with going against Georgi Petrovic, who's the best shot stopper in MLS, you could play really well and end up with a scoreless home draw. NYCFC, this is their worst 7-game stretch in terms of points per game since May of 2015.
They have not won since April 22nd in MLS.
I think the silver lining is they played really well in this game, but like, it's a dark cloud because it's been more than a month since they've won a game in MLS in any competition, I think. And I mean, they're going to have to do more than a month of cobbling together some sort of front line and hoping that one of these midfielders can just walk the ball into the net, because that's the only way they score.
Interesting video coming out. James Sands talking with some of the supporters who are, of course, frustrated as you go over a month without results. Apparently, we touched on that on Thursday, as I remembered from not being here and loving this show so much that I listened to it. Jonathan Sanchez wants to know, is it time to hit the panic button? We will dig into that coming up, I think, on Wednesday. I will move us on to Seattle versus the Portland Timbers. Portland haven't lost in four straight versus Seattle. They are unbeaten in eight in Seattle in all competitions against their biggest rival. Brian Schmetzer said after the previous match this year in Portland, this isn't a rivalry anymore because we're not competitive. And I think after this one, he basically said, Gio has my number. A lot has gone right for Seattle. This is a weird blip in there. And I think over the course of the year, it will bring a question mark, which we hopefully will see some of in Leagues Cup, which is this a team that has the pieces to step up in big moments? Because it doesn't feel like they understand the added pressure, anxiety, tension, especially in the games against Portland, which is the closest you're going to get to a playoff atmosphere. They were not in the playoffs last year. They obviously won CCL, but there's question marks around some of this group. The big moment, though, is Christian Roldan returns, creates something for them in like the first 5 minutes on the field. He's special. He is, I think, the leader that gets them to the spot emotionally as well as a group. And so the hope is if he's healthy and can be back, that solves a lot of it for the Seattle Sounders. Let's go down to Miami. 2-1 loss to DC United at home. Oh, first post-Neville game. This one's yours.
If things could get worse in Miami, they just did. I mean, I feel bad for Javier Morales. It's a huge opportunity for him. Fantastic player. But he was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because Phil Neville called him up from the second team to be the assistant coach in the first team. Jason Christ was the guy that brought him over to Major League Soccer. So then you go into this role. The pressure is on, but it's his dream job. Then they get a red card 7 minutes in by Kamal Miller, your Canadian international center back that you traded for Bryce Duke and Ariel Laster. So then you're going against this DC team where their bread and butter is in that transition, balls from wide areas into a player of Benteke that has been fantastic and why we gave him the shout for the All-Star game. But you're without Gregory, you're without Mata, now you're without Kamal Miller, you're without so many key components for Inter Miami when it's already been not great there. And then you look at their schedule in which they go. I've just pulled it up here. They play Birmingham away, where not going to be an easy game to go play. They've knocked out Charlotte in the Open Cup. And then your next two league games, New England Revs on the road, Philadelphia on the road.
Yikes.
And you're going to be without Kamal Miller in the New England game. That's a huge loss to an already defensive side that has been struggling because of two key midfielders out. Interesting for me, and maybe you guys can touch on this, because I couldn't.
We're not allowed to. There are only one touch.
One touch take.
So okay. You got to take it to goal, or you can let it.
I'm
going
to take
out
it to goal because it doesn't make sense to me. Joseph Martinez getting the start over Capana. I know both of these guys have, you know, Joseph had the brace, but in a game like this, I'm really shocked that Morales didn't go with Capana against a DC where you know it's going to be physical. And I'm not saying that Joseph Martinez isn't, but a big target number nine, especially when you go down a red card in the seventh minute and it took 76 minutes for DC to get on the goal scoring sheet. I don't know. Shout out to Ian Fry, though, getting on the goal scoring sheet as a young player. It's great to see. But from bad to worse to worse to worse, like, let's hope Lionel Messi doesn't get the 18 months to go to Barcelona and he goes to Inter Miami. Because if you talk Major League Soccer, we had the discussion on MLS 360. Is he the guy to turn it around and get maybe Inter Miami to a playoff position? And I think he is, because you look at Major League Soccer, when you have a main focal point, the Jerusis, the Heine Mukhtars, the one player that can make a difference, Lionel Messi would be that guy to do it.
Nailed it.
Done. That's my one take.
You didn't need us.
17 takes
one,
later.
One touch takes. Let's go over to FC Cincinnati, knocking off the Chicago Fire. Doyle?
The only other player in the MVP discussion with Hani at this point is Lucho Acosta. Yeah. No disrespect to Denny Bouanga, who's been awesome, but like, Atlanta would need to be better. Acosta is like the burden was shared last year between him and Brandon Vasquez and Brenner, and it is not being shared this year. And you can see it because Acosta's only got 3 assists.
Yeah.
He's, I think, second in the league in chances created and like second in like expected assists. Like, the guys are not finishing. Cincy are still at a record pace, halfway, 2.4 points per game halfway through the season. And this one was Lucho Acosta, you know, like, rotated squad, very tired because they've really put it out there in the Open Cup. Needed a special play, 82nd minute, long ball over the top. Lucho Acosta makes a special play, taking it down like that in the box, cutting a defender, and then hitting it near post for the 1-0. And that's, like, that's Cincinnati this year. It's Lucho Acosta and 1-0.
This one felt different, of like, something out of not nothing, because it was a great ball from Arias, but like you said, it was Lucho sort of recognizing, like, it's going to be me. Yeah. It has to be me. And he's been impressive. Shout out to Kimi Ordóñez for getting the start. That's exciting for the young man. Let's go to Philadelphia at Montreal. This one will be me. 3-0 win for the Philadelphia Union. David Goss, Golden Boot star Julian Carranza gets 2. Gazdag gets denied, but that's fine because we go every single game from here on out. And I think you talked about it, Kalen, in the CCL segment of, like, Philly's back, and that's the feeling. And when they're downhill at home, like, it just feels like a wave is hitting you. And you watch this game, and it's deflected goals, and it's, deflected chances. It's because they're playing in your attacking third. Mm-hmm. And every mistake you make is a chance for them. And it's one touch or two touches for it to then be a shot on goal. And every team knows that. And they know they can't make mistakes when you go to Philly. And you make one, you go down 1-0, and the game just opens up for them. This felt, and it has a few games now, like last year's 4-0s in June and July, where it was like, just rotate your lineup when you go to Philly and, like, move on to the next one. And Philly, credit to them, I think they've put themselves back into supporter shield combo that I thought was done for them. And it wouldn't have mattered. I think MLS Cup is the goal. Maybe a Leagues Cup as well, like, win a trophy in a knockout competition. They've won some shields, or they've won a shield, but this feels like they're back in that. And so, big result, and I think just a ton of momentum for the Philadelphia Union. Let's go up a little to the New York Red Bulls, facing off against Orlando City. 3-0 win for Orlando on the road, Kalen.
Yeah, Orlando impressed me this game. They played fantastic. Facundo Torres with 2. He has looked like the real deal in the last few games. I think the Facundo Torres that we've been looking to show up consistently for Orlando City. And then you look at the bench of Orlando City as well, that, like, gets me excited, because there was the big talk in the offseason was they made all these transfers. It's going to be one of the best teams in Major League Soccer. And then it was like the inconsistency of Orlando was, like, laughable, because it'd be like win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. So I'm not saying that they've steadied the ship, but I feel like the players, Cara finally, you know, showing up as well. I still love Duncan Maguire, but you can't take someone like Cara off of the field right now. And then on the flip side with Red Bulls, that's another team where it's like, got rid of your manager, you're hoping for change, you're waiting for Lewis Morgan to come back, Laquinas as well. Then Lewis Morgan comes onto the pitch, gets subbed off again with injury.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the, like, you need an attacking threat for this New York Red Bull side. I think they've been screaming out for it. Like, you can be defensively sound all you want, but if you don't have someone scoring or putting the ball into the back of the net consistently, and you're waiting on someone like Lewis Morgan, and then he goes down, which looked like, and I'm speculating here, the same injury that he's been struggling with, because you could see the frustration when he went down, holding his head, like, no, why me, why this time? And I believe it's a hip, a consistent hip injury that he's been doing. So that to me just shows that he potentially, I'm not going to say it, but, like, is that season ending? Like, is that one of those where it's like he could tell in a player's face? And if it is, Red Bulls are in trouble, because they have no one that is exciting up top. They don't have a BWP. They don't have a Sasha Kljestan that is putting balls into the right areas. You know, those prime positions where that's where the Red Bulls were dangerous back in the day. They don't have that. So when people go to the Red Bulls stadium arena, you're not scared. You're not scared anymore. So, yeah, I don't know. It's sad for Red Bulls. It's exciting for Orlando. I'll say that.
5 unbeaten for Orlando. They've won 2 of their last 3.
They've looked really good.
We got a few tweets from fans for the first time this year of being like, have they turned the corner?
I think so.
Be positive. And yeah, it's good for their fan base to be able to feel that way once again. Austin RSL in this one. Gavin Beavers,
city.
Baby.
No, do
the beef.
You got to do the city like Andrew does. Come on,
no,
do
that's
it.
That's St. Louis.
Oh, sorry,
yeah,
we're
that's
not St.
yours.
Louis yet? Oh,
no,
that's mine. Okay,
that's
I'll do
my fault because I didn't space properly the document. I've been
sorry,
trying to figure it out for
bad.
The last 2 minutes as well. Can I? I'll do it on
go,
Beavers
go,
though.
Go.
Beavers, big Gav, baby. Let's go, Gavin Beavers. Zach McMath is out. Gavin Beavers steps in. Weather delight. He sticks to his guns. He makes a couple big saves against the explosive attack that used to be Austin FC. Oof. Outside of the joking, RSL is one of the best academies in Major League Soccer. It is cool to see them push players through. It is cool to see a roster built a lot on this. And Rubio Rubin gets two goals. We're starting to get back into the place with Krylock back, with Musovski back, where they can just ride the hot hand. None of these guys are going to score 25 goals. If Pablo Mascherini can pick the right ones on the right days, you get a streak from Rubin, you take him out, you get a streak from Musovski. I think Krylock obviously at another level, and then now you've got Gomez and Julio around it. So it feels like for RSL, there's some positivity. Don't love central midfield still, but they'll figure that one out. Okay, now!
Can I say one thing on Beavers? Because I was hard on him. And for a young guy, what was the game where he like leaked? It was like four goals. And I was like, what is the manager doing putting him in?
It was rotation, I think.
I know, but still, he's bounced back from it. So yeah. I'd love to see it. Okay, anyways.
There you go.
Now we can go on.
City. 20-point font right now. 3-0 win at home against the Houston Dynamo. Still no Klaus, no problem. This one's yours.
Yeah, you look at City when they're at home. These fans are ridiculous. Honestly, that stadium, I'm dying to go to it because I would love to be a player that is able to play in front of that home crowd. It's phenomenal. And this is why they're able to do the job without someone like a João Klaus. It took them some time, I think, to reestablish, okay, how can we play without our big man leading our front line? And that's normal for an expansion team. I think everyone's like, oh, the honeymoon phase is over. I think it was like, how do we play without João Klaus? Okay, this is going to take some time. They finally figured it out. Leuven in the midfield, maybe can that be my player that I can actually get the shout for the MLS All-Star? Can I do that? I'm going to switch it halfway through the segment. I'm doing it. Done.
Halfway through the segment. That segment was like 9 segments ago.
Well, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm giving him my shout.
You can just say he should be an. We can. You can vote for more than one person.
I know, but
MLSsoccer.com voting is currently open. You're allowed to go. You can go and put a ballot in. You can vote for a full team.
He is freaking so good. I love him. He gets himself in good positions. He gets on the half turn. He dictates the tempo. He's starting to slowly understand in Major League Soccer because it does take time. When do I need to speed the game up? When do I need to slow it down? How do we change tactically on the road as opposed to at home? And it comes from this man right here in the middle of the pitch. Love him. Houston, they're scaring me right now. I'm not gonna lie. The Houston Dynamo, they have conceded 9 goals defensively in the last two games. Shocking. 6-2 against Vancouver, giving Vancouver a club record scoring 6 goals in one game. They were shocking when they went up to Canada, and they were shocking when they went to St. Louis. So Houston, you gotta clean it up. Because it was a team that was exciting me for a bit there.
They've been pretty much that way on the road the whole year. They do go back home for their next game. I will say this for fans who are circling it. Second to last week of the season, St. Louis, that's the next time they play at Vancouver, the big Leuven versus Brian White grudge match.
Love it.
For Kalen's vote, which will be about 4 months after the All-Star game has actually happened. Let's go to the Colorado Rapids against the San Jose Earthquakes. Doyle, this game happened.
Yeah, it's a scoreless draw. Weirdly, Colorado, no wins, 4 losses, 4 draws in 8 games at home this year. That should be the reverse. Like, they should be unbeatable at home with that altitude advantage, but they're just not able to figure out how to hurt teams, how to turn chances into goals, including a late penalty kick in this one. If you're San Jose, two road shutouts this week. I think they took four points from 2 road games. Probably pretty happy with that. They could have played better. They're not a deep team, and I think the lack of rotation kind of showed in their legs a little bit in this one. But they're, you know, halfway through the season, you're probably pretty happy if you're Luchi Gonzalez, because there's a lot of good stuff there, even though this game, I cannot recommend that anyone go back and watch it.
And I will finish us off with the Vancouver Whitecaps, because I don't even want to touch on that. For Sporting Kansas City, a 1-1 draw, 7 points in the last 6 days for Sporting Kansas City. It was a good road stretch for them and for Vancouver. I thought, and I know every Vancouver fan has tweeted this at us, you can go watch instant replay. I thought they were robbed of a goal midway through the second half here. I didn't think Blackman affected the play. We break it all down there, so you can go watch it. But Vancouver ends up getting a goal off Gault's penalty kick, 1-1 draw. I still think Vancouver, you don't want to drop home points because they've been so bad on the road, but a positive result for them because they are going into a huge week. Yep. So let's look forward to the midweek. We've got U.S. Open Cup coming up. Two games on Tuesday night. Chicago Fire hosting Houston Dynamo, Cincinnati hosting Pittsburgh, and then two games on Wednesday night. You mentioned Birmingham hosting Inter Miami. Their Legion games have been awesome to watch, both in their home stadium and at the University of Alabama. That's going to be must-watch stuff. And then RSL hosting LA Galaxy. It's the second time those teams are facing off in a week. We have some MLS regular season action. LAFC start making up games, so they play against Atlanta United at home on Wednesday night. And then Dallas versus St. Louis. This is the weather-delayed game, so they will resume
in the 50th minute
of this game. Because of injuries to Dallas, I think Paxton Pomykal is on the field when that game ended as well as Sebastian Legette.
Yeah. What was the result when that one?
0-0
Honestly, if I'm any just of those players, just give me the point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Just everyone just goes and sits down and waits for
just give
minutes.
Me the point.
We're not condoning that, by
not
the way.
Condoning
and it would be
it,
40
like,
minutes.
Yeah.
My mouth is bad.
Just give me the point.
Well, that's going to happen. So that thing's going to happen at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then obviously the LAFC game, but the big game of the week, the Canadian Championship, Vancouver hosting Montreal, the second straight year Vancouver hosts. That one's at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Vancouver trying to win it now in back-to-back years. There's a really cool initiative Vancouver is doing. So if you're in the area, they are taking some of their ticket sales. They're putting it into a fund to help the new League One teams in BC host Canadian Championship games next year because they can't afford to do it.
Cool.
So some of the money from the ticket sales will go to that fund, which would help some of the lower division teams. I believe Surrey. Yeah.
Canadians, man.
Surrey Hills.
We're just so nice, aren't we?
Nicest people
in the world.
Yeah. Except for
don't say except for me.
Yeah. No, I would never. Are you kidding me? No. You're my favorite. So this is Montreal now heading over. It was Toronto last year. It was a penalty kick shootout win after 90 minutes. It's a one game, so there's no two legs. There's no other travel. Montreal now has to come from Philly all the way across for this Wednesday night game. Let's start big picture here. Vancouver versus CF Montreal. Who is this bigger for? Who has more pressure?
I think maybe not pressure. I think maybe pressure would fall on Montreal because they're traveling. Then they're going to BC place. But I think the more excitement is around Vancouver.
Okay.
Like, they could do this back-to-back. And they've been having an electric season as well. Like, they're a fun team to watch this season. Whereas Montreal, you know, they started really slow. They had new coaching change, new players. Then new acquisitions came in with Ariel Lassiter, Bryce Duke, that I feel like has added a little bit of a oomph level to Montreal. But I think the excitement is around Vancouver. Like, if they can do this and make it back-to-back years, like, and then what they're doing with the ticket sales, I just think the story of it would be incredible.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a head nod. Meh.
Yeah.
I slightly disagree because they won it. Everything you said is 100% true. And if you host the final for a team that doesn't win a ton of trophies, they are not an MLS Cup favorite, even if they make the playoffs.
Don't tell Brian White that.
I will not tell Brian. I would tell Simon Betcher, but I wouldn't tell Brian White. B. White knows I got him. Jersey strong. And that's your
Jersey,
neck of the woods now, too.
That's why I like him.
That's why you like him.
I'm a Jersey gal.
But for Hernan Losada, he still hasn't found his feet. And I don't think this is obviously not the roster that Wilfred Nancy left last year. It won't be this season. Montreal was second in the East. They were third in Supporters Shield last year. That season will sit different than this year, no matter how well Losada puts pieces together, how well Aswanyera, Bryce Duke looks, whatever you get from Chinosi Ofor, like, at its best, it's going to be a worse season than last year. If you could win a trophy in the beginning of June, if you could qualify for Champions League in the beginning of June, I think that just resets the pressure and the conversation. So that's why, because Vancouver won it last year, I think you're in a spot where for Montreal, this is something new. This is a way to sort of break through. But for the Whitecaps, if you host the game at home, it would be tough to lose. Talk to me about this matchup. They're probably both going to play back five, wing backs.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Vancouver's been more often in a 4-3-2-1.
Okay.
You know, like, the Vanny likes that mid-aughts AC Milan Christmas tree. He has tinkered around with the back five at times, so he could have that up his sleeve. But I don't think so. And I expect Vancouver to come out and try to possess the ball, and I expect Montreal to come out and try to create 50-50s, win the ball, and transition. It's not been full-on maximum overdrive like we saw out of that, you know, that one year that Lasada had in D.C. a couple of years ago, but, like, it's verging in that direction, and they've been better at it over the last 6 weeks, and it's a kind of a classic smash-and-grab situation.
It worked for them last year in the final as well. Of like, they didn't really dominate the ball against Toronto,
no,
but they were able to win because they are comfortable in that way, especially when they get the tempo of the game right. How does Montreal react to that, Kaylin? Because Montreal's a team that also don't want the ball, really. It would seem to fit their style.
Yeah. It does fit Montreal's style. I will
She's
say this.
So much better than me. Montreal.
Montreal. I will say it'll be won or lost if they can shut down someone like a Julian Gressel, service from wide areas. Because you look at Montreal, sometimes at the back, they look shaky, and that's because they've lost so many players. They've lost, like, their stalemate central midfielders. They do have some key injuries as well. But this game, if they can shut down the midfield and the transition of Vancouver, because the one thing that it's exciting about Vancouver this year is the ability of how quick they play. And it's actually pretty nice. Quick ball into the midfield. And this is why Julian Gressel is given kind of, I'll say, like a free-ish role. Mm. He can roll out wide areas. He can roll centrally. But his distribution from the middle of the pitch has allowed them to be dangerous in the attack, from balls from wide areas or central balls, splitting defense. So I just feel like Montreal, in order to be successful, it does play into their favor right now. If they can be defensively sound, ride the waves for the first 15, 20 minutes,
yeah,
away from home, considering the travel, coming from Philly as well. Because they won't go back to Montreal from Philly.
No,
they'll travel directly across.
Straight,
yeah.
I do think when you watch, as good as Vancouver's been at home, there is a feeling, I think, sometimes of, as chances go missing early,
yeah,
of like panic. Mm-hmm. And as great as everyone we just talked about has been, they start to like snap at things. They start to press a little too hard. And I do think you're right that if Montreal can manage those 20 or so minutes, mm-hmm, and the crowd settles, it feels like then the pressure goes on a Brian White and a Betcher or Sergio Cordova, whoever it is, of like, this is the one.
Yeah.
And that's where they've not been great. Something to note, and I'm not an expert on this, both teams have to field three Canadian players for this competition.
I knew this was coming.
I believe that means in the starting lineup.
Starting lineup, starting 11.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So for Vancouver, this weekend, they did not start a single Canadian. Now, I think part of that was to protect the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Raposo will be one. Russell Tybert will have to be one.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have to shift that central midfield, whoever the pieces you drop in that are.
Goalkeeper.
Oof.
And then the third one.
Which you don't want to do, but yeah.
The third one, they don't have another choice unless they want to play a really young player in the field. Otherwise, it will be Tomas Hasal.
I think it'll be Bomer, not Hasal.
Yeah,
really?
I feel like you have to go for a younger outfield player rather than a goalkeeper. Because
you don't think they're going to start Hasal in this? You really think they're going to change another starter?
I think you have to. Did you not?
Anders keeps saying Ali Ahmed's name in my ear.
Yeah,
I don't think he's healthy. He got knocked out. He was taken to the hospital after the last game.
That's right.
That was like the point of why Hasal played in the league, which is the issue for them.
I just feel like in a game like this, where it's a one-off and you're going against a Canadian cross rivalry, you want your best goalkeeper in,
yeah,
between the pipes.
Yeah.
Because when everything goes to hell, at least you can rely on him.
So this is going to be interesting. For CF Montreal, it shouldn't be an issue. Pantema starts,
yeah,
in goal. It will probably change some things. You'd assume a Brogiard probably starts, and then probably a Saliba or a Rea gets a start,
yeah,
centrally instead of Bryce Duke, because the assumption is Pantemas and Chouinard are two of the Canadians.
But Bryce Duke got subbed off at 45 the last game.
Yes.
Maybe for like rest. I don't know. Would you sub Bryce Duke off?
Well, or you could start Iliadis, I think, is also Canadian technically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is not as straightforward as it would have been last year when you had like,
no,
Kone and
I kind of like this
Kamal
rule,
Miller.
Though, I'm not going to lie.
I love this
I
rule.
I love this rule.
Also, because it's like, how do you help Canadian,
yeah,
soccer? Not having, you know, 12 players who can never play for your national team,
yeah,
face off in a Canadian championship. So I'm okay with it. It does make this a little wonky. I think one of the beautiful things about soccer is that hour before when the lineup drops and everyone has an hour to like yell about it, this one's going to be a fun one because
it
might be someone like you guys said.
He's still injured, right, for Montreal?
Piet? Yeah.
Piet? Yeah, sorry. Excuse me.
Do I know this?
Yeah,
dude,
I'm just making up names. I should probably know that because he plays on our Canadian men's national team. So that's a huge.
Oh, sorry. I forgot Joel Waterman. So Joel Waterman will start. Pantemis will start. Schwan Yer can start. So that could be the three. Yeah. So yeah, they're fine. I knew there was another defender, but I kept thinking Kamal Miller that whole time. Either way, it goes down 10 p.m. Eastern time at BC Place. If you're in the area, go. It was, I believe, a Canadian championship record crowd last year. Mm-hmm. It was electric. It was so much fun. Insignia didn't take a penalty. We can talk about that again on another day. But for the Vancouver Whitecaps, looking for their second trophy under Vinny Sartini and looking to continue a hot form here. Last thing to close out on, the US U-20s playing in the U-20 World Cup on the men's side. They lost to Uruguay in the quarterfinals. You can take that and then just clear out the team name. And then we could just do it again
in
2 or 4 years. The U.S. lost to Ecuador, Venezuela, and then Serbia as well.
Right.
Serbia, right? Yeah,
it was Serbia in 15. Yeah.
In the last four men's World Cup. So they are the only team, I believe, to have made all four quarterfinals.
Correct.
In that span. But they have also lost at the quarterfinal stage every single time.
Yeah, the difference this time is just in terms of who was available, who was released. Like, they were missing probably half their starters. And for the U.S. to be missing half their starters and to go 4 wins, no goals allowed, 10 goals scored through the first four games. I sent a tweet. I rarely tweet anymore, which is a good feeling. But I sent a tweet saying, like, in the history of U.S. soccer, there's pre-2007 inauguration of the USSDA, which is now MLS Next, and there's post-2007. These kids, all of them, the kids who were missing, the kids who played, the next generation of kids who are on the 17s, they all came through USSDA and now MLS Next. It is a clear academy pipeline to the first team for their clubs, and that makes a clear pipeline to the national team. And that's how both national teams eventually improve and, mm-hmm. you know, get into the top 10, get for Canada, get into the top 20 consistently and produce the type of players that the best teams have. Like, you can, both teams will still recruit the occasional dual national, you know, both teams, there'll be the occasional Matt Turner who, you know, does not go through the traditional paths, you know, develops late, and that's great. And that's, it's great that college soccer still exists to catch some of those guys. But the real way to be the type of team that consistently gets deep into the World Cup is to have a professional academy development system. The U.S. have that now. And because of that, we make the quarterfinals every time we play in the U20 World Cup. The question is, all right, can we create that one or two players,
star
that,
ones,
that generation, and like maybe Ricardo Pepi would have been that for this team. He wasn't released. He's not with the U20s. He's with the full national team. You know, maybe Jalen Neal at the back. Maybe he makes a difference.
Brian Gutierrez.
And Brian Gutierrez in central midfield. If Noel Buck had been called, maybe they.
I just think it's so important to release these players, though. Like, I understand it because you want to have them for your first team, but it helps the development of not only your U20s, but for your full team, because that adds confidence into these young players lifting a U20 trophy. I played in two of them. I was at two U20 World Cups. Didn't do great, but I still had the experience of how to deal with pressure in high situations. Go to a different country where they're in Argentina right now and probably one of the most hostile environments, maybe other than I'd played a few times in Mexico where it's a difficult place to go, but they put it in towns where, you know, it's not the main cities, which is so important for these players. So when they do get that first team experience, they know how to deal with going to different countries, eating different food, having quick turnarounds, playing in a knockout phase, getting to the quarterfinals. How do you deal with that pressure after four times? That's definitely hanging heavy on these players. Like, they're still young and thinking, oh God, the last four times we got knocked out of a quarterfinal. Like, I would have loved to have seen the top players for this U20 team go, because probably they would have been in that final.
Yeah. I hear a lot of what you're saying, and I agree with all of it. No, I agree with all of the experience of a World Cup, which is you can't reproduce that. Playing for the Revs is not the same as going to a foreign country, not knowing your next opponent, having a knockout game. How do you quick turnaround? How do you figure it out? How do you travel? How do you treat your body? Which is a World Cup experience. But I do think from a soccer point of view, it is less of a challenge than playing against top level players in Major League Soccer in a professional league. And so when you have a guy like Brian Gutierrez who starts for Chicago, I can understand, well, you're getting as good experience. Okay. I think the debate is totally fair. And it was a debate had across MLS. Yeah. Philly made one decision where Chicago made a different one. Atlanta made one where the LA Galaxy made a different one. Like, I don't think there is a consensus. I don't think there should be. Mm. And it was definitely like for each different piece. One of the tough parts, I think, was the timing. Like Kevin Paredes, I don't think they were allowed to play him for 90 minutes because he's coming off a full season. He was the best player on the field when he came on the field yesterday because he's at a different level right now than I think most of the pieces.
I thought he was really poor in his...
I thought he was phenomenal yesterday. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I thought he was the only player who understood the pressure, was prepared for the physicality and the intensity, which I thought was
the issue. I love Kevin Paredes. I didn't think he was good in his appearances. Worth mentioning... it's not just the MLS teams who refuse to release players. Paxton Aaronson also was not released by Eintracht Frankfurt.
And Puksas was only released after they played in their cup final. Right. Yeah, it's a thing across the world.
This is supposed to be our shortest segment, and we could talk about this for an hour. Love it.
Domino. I told Doyle I would do that.
I'm done.
USU-20s lose, so quarterfinal once again. Don't worry. One day, Canada will get to a quarterfinal of the U-20 World Cup, and we'll all celebrate together. I look forward to it very much. We have the Nations League coming up in like, I don't know, a week or something.
Can't wait.
So Canadian men's team, a chance to put on a show there. We've got the Gold Cup after that. And we've got a Women's World Cup this summer in New Zealand and Australia. So everyone get your alarm clock set because it is going to be a great. I love watching soccer through the night with like whoever's most ridiculous that's willing to be on. That's the time when social media is actually the best because we're all kind of like a family hanging out together until the results come through. So that's all for us here. Thank you so much, you two, for being with me.
Always.
You are my first pick on an all-star ballot. You are my underrated pick until Brian White scores goals. Then you're off my team.
Understandable.
Andrew Wiebe, I think, will be back at some point whenever he, finishing whatever he does.
He's not making my 7-a-side.
No.
Because he's not here enough. He takes too much vacation.
He also has no ankles, so it's like, what are you going to pick a guy who's always hurt?
Is that why he always shows his ankles on TV?
Yeah, probably. Probably. You just winked at me.
I know.
Not at the camera.
Sorry.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.